Hi, this is Amitabh, recording on 11th of September. Don't know whether this is a rabbit hole, but love this passage, so just gonna try and read it out. It's from a book called Little Bird by Claudio Donoso, and this is really the first page, quite literally, and I was stunned when I read this. In fact, I probably bought the book because I read this page. So I'm going to try and read this out. So the title of the book is Little Bird, and this is the first page. The passage starts with a small excerpt of a poem by William Blake. So I'll read the poem as well. So here goes the poem. He loves to sit and hear me sing, then laughing sports and plays with me, then stretches out my golden wing and mocks my loss of liberty. William Blake. So I'll read the passage. The passage starts now. I have a cat named Cocorito. He's big, 15 pounds, and furry, and he isn't very social. His main way of showing affection is bringing me tiny dead birds. That is what cats do, I know. Give their owners dead birds as presents. Or maybe trophies. Who am I to say? Cocorito never eats the birds. He tortures them, plays with them like balls of wool, but in the end, he always leaves them in my bed. Which is where I do everything these days, even eat. That's how I'm so sure the birds are for me. My cat, who has 7 lives in the Americas and 9 here in Scandinavia, brings me death as a present. But the thing is, I have seen plenty of death already. I don't need any more. Maybe Cocorito disagrees. Maybe he thinks if I paid more attention to death, it wouldn't bother me so much. He is the expert, I guess. He has at least 7 lives, like I said. And after the 20 days he was gone last winter, he must be down a few. When he came home, he opened the window himself, drank some water, and fell asleep in my bed for 2 days. Then he got up, mewed, and lived again. The birds are the best gift Cocorito has to give. Maybe he wishes he didn't have to deliver them in death throes, beating and panting and flapping, all in, and then suddenly past tense. Or maybe that's the point. Maybe my cat wants me to understand that lives, except his, end in just a few seconds. Well, I get it, Cocorito. No repeats. When I find a bird dying in my bed, I wrap it in damp paper towels, leaving its head uncovered so it can breathe. I warm the bird in my hands, clean the blood off its wings, stroke its feathers, and try to open its beak. When it dies anyway, or when I have found one that's already dead, I make a shroud out of Kleenex and bury it outside. Or at least take the bird under the birch trees and hide it in the dry leaves. That's the end of the passage. I mean, this it's obviously a whole book, but I'll pause here. Something very strong and poetic here, right? Something very that touches a chord. There's a lot of elements here. There is obviously the grimness of the topic, but there's also the elegant beauty of the animal kingdom trying to teach us something. There's also the whole idea that teachers will teach only from their context. So the cat is only going to try and teach you from his or her context, not from your context, right? He or she never rarely ever understands our context. And that's true for even human teachers, right? I don't think even human teachers really get into your skin to teach you. And it's rare. I mean, it happens, but that's very rare. And that's when you know you have found the real teacher. Something in this passage struck me as real, authentic, poetic, and the whole act of giving, right? Like, we give what we think might work for others, and that's a very neat insight. I mean, is it really an insight which blew my brains away? Not sure. Is it an insight I couldn't have known on my own? I think I already knew it on my own. But the way it is put together is quite beautiful, quite pithy. And that's the thing about insights, right? I think all of us can have insights and have had insights since we were 2 years old. It's how you express them, how you bring it out, and how you make sure that the other person sees your insight in, let's say, a 2-minute, 5-minute conversation or writing or poem is really the challenge of communication. And I have always maintained this, and this is probably the last part of the rabbit hole here, that without communication, or without the power of communicating, without the power of language, more importantly, because communication can be only verbal, only writing, sign language, but we need the ability to communicate agreed concepts, which is what language is, right? Language is an agreed set of vocabulary. When I say hot, it means hot to me, it means hot to you. And none of us really sit and meditate on what hot could mean. I mean, does my hot vary from yours? In certain cases, it does. But broadly, we assume that when you say hot, it just means one thing in that particular situation. Coming back, all I was trying to say is communication, whether it's written, spoken, sign, whatever other ways we communicate, subtle, body language, whatever are the other ways we communicate. Communication is the only way we can progress our thoughts, right? Like, if we didn't have language, and I believe I say this very often, if we didn't have language, we would absolutely lose our ability to think. So without language, and I think Noam Chomsky says this often, he's obviously a professor of linguistics, and I am none of that. But it seems very logical to me, right? It doesn't have to be a particular language. It doesn't have to be English, Hindi, Marathi, Sanskrit, German, none of that, right? But it has to be a way in which you think of concepts, and it has to be a way in which you think of abstractions. Because without that abstraction, there's no thought. Like, you can't think without an abstraction in your head. And that's the layered beauty of the intelligence engine that we have in our brains. That's it from me. I'll leave this rabbit hole here. I'm sure a lot of these rabbit holes we'll revisit at some time, someday, especially if it's a conversation. Write in at amitabh.mwrh@gmail.com, and that's it. Wrap up. Thank you.